just before we start, Chris, we were having a discussion over lunch about times for reply and our deliberations. I'd just like to float with you. A time period.
Yes.
Would it be, let me just check the date. Would the 6th of October be a reasonable time for you to get your reply to us?
Mr. Chair, I'm just checking the final day of the hearing.
Yes,
the 13th of September.
So the 6th of October is 3.5 weeks.
I will the construction and confirm if that's okay. I understand that the council is after at least 3 weeks, so
yeah, so you've got more than 3.
Yes.
And in the last week of our hearing, they got, apart from the council, so you've then got the money submitter.
Yes.
Queensland Park, so you really, for most of your report writers, you've got at least 4.5 weeks.
Yes, sorry, in the last week we've got Skyline and...
Oh, we've got Skyline. Kingston. Oh, sorry, I was thinking, yes, sorry.
Yes, look.
I'm just thinking about as it was unamended.
Yes, look, I'll just confirm that date, but with, I think 3 weeks, three and a half weeks, I should hopefully, I'm sure we'll be busy, but it will be sufficient.
Well, it is, it's just that if we start getting... We were a bit concerned if we went beyond that, we were going to get into having deliberations around late weekend, and then we're saying to run out of time for getting report writing because the council wants to have our reports by March of next year.
Yes, certainly.
And these are going to be lengthy, I suspect. So it's the deal from our point of view.
Yes, no, I'll just set instructions now and I might come back to you.
Yes.
Mark Dennis Jones.
Yeah, that would be why I raised it now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just before you do start questions with Ms. Jones, Ms. Bax does have a paragraph on the submissions and her summary, so I'll ask you to read that, please.
Submission 715 sets increased development within the 0.7B area of the Jack's Point Zone. There is insufficient slip-bottom evidence to determine the suitability of providing new additional activity. In addition, there was uncertainty with the existing traffic modelling relied on, such that the traffic effects from the proposed rezoning were uncertain. In my view, robust evidence is required to ensure that the traffic effects internally within the zone and externally on State Highway 6 and further will not be adverse. I'm not comfortable with the rezoning slot because there is not enough information about the traffic.
I've just got into the start on this issue of the O&L line. I'm just wondering if it's, it seems to me what you're saying is that it's an error, its location. Would there be any person affected by correcting that error using section 16?
I'm not sure who the owner of Jack's Point Hill is. The ownership's pretty complicated out there. It'll be someone related to the Derby instead. So we're shifting the O&L up.
So it's making.
So, and obviously they don't want that then. So no, I don't think anyone would be obviously affected. It makes it better for the Jardine owner. They've got land that is currently shown as O&L and would no longer be shown as O&L. It's neutral
and the only
for Mont. Yeah, they may have a view on that, but one judge is neutral for them, although it does mean that it enables development up to up to the country, let's say, or further up the hill. But we're saying that's appropriate. Regardless of the line and the
And the only landscape evidence we've got is Dr. Green's on this particular area, isn't it?
Yes, I'm trying to think what Mr. Espy says. I don't know that he may comment tomorrow in terms of that Bible, because he has been in discussions with Dr. Reed. I know they are, he can tell you what his view is there.
I doubt that he spoke to Dr. Reed.
My understanding is they are in agreement.
Yes.
And I know, just in case it helps you, because you won't hear from Dr. Reed for a while, she, in her evidence, she notes that she would like to do a site to double check the location of the OL. And what she's come back to me and said is that she's even in the absence of such a walking off the line, she's very comfortable that the OSR sits outside the OL. But when it comes to a point of needing to actually map the OL on a map, that's who she needs to do a site visit. But irrespective of having done a site visit, she's comfortable.
We're hearing from her on the 4th of September. She has the chance to do that site visit before we hear from her, presumably.
Yes, I can't speak for her, but she's on leave right now, but I don't think it's for
sometime in the end of August, but not here that day. That would assist us, because it seems to me that it's all very well having those submissions, but it's correct mistakes that don't affect anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And if all the landscape evidence suggests that's the appropriate place, we should do that.
I'll start from the top with the development capacity modelling data. As I understand it, this area of Homestead Bay, I'll call it, as opposed to Jack's Point, is not included in any of the potential future development. When it says Jack's Point, what does it mean?
Yes,
by Jack's Point?
It will be included in the Jack's Point. I'm not sure what data you're referring to, but in the rest of the class is larger.
There's a table in the evidence of both Mr. Osborne and the cases where the council went to the owners and said, "This is, please estimate for us what would happen." And one of them is the line that says Jack's Point.
So my understanding is that it would include 243 unit residents within Homestead Bay. I think the data may have come from information involved.
It was provided by the owner, so that's fine. I just didn't know what the land area was.
My thing, Jack's Point zone includes Homestead Bay, Jack's Point, and Henry Downs sub areas, if you like.
So, to follow up, is that 243, that figure, is that the zone capacity of Homestead Bay under the... Is that what's provided for already in the PDP?
Yes, it's provided. That's essentially what's provided in both the ODP and the PDP. Because in the draft letter for Jack's Point, Homestead Bay really wasn't modified.
And that's the foundation of the figure already, is that?
Yes, if you're sliding over for a trigger rule, that's the foundation of it.
My second question, I'd appreciate it if you would talk us through these two drawings just so that I fully understand what is going on.
Sorry, but it's
a history, isn't it, that I found the detailed long description, but it would be really helpful just to be talked through.
So appendix four.
Can we get this in exhibit one? The user, I think. So these pieces of paper.
Appendix four, structure plan, scenario A.
Mr. Chair, it's appendix four, excuse me, to the section 42A report.
As an A4, and then we've got an A3 copy. Is that what it is?
Yes, an A3 in your
documentation.
Should be.
Okay,
so it's appendix four.
Hmm.
Section 42. Section 42, Mr. Jones. And page 1 is scenario A.
Mm-hmm. And that's, so that is the recommendation before you. And it's in terms of the bold. Do you want me to talk you through the activity areas?
Yes, I do actually. A very quick one. You know, I have taken the trouble to try and figure it out myself.
Okay, maybe we'll try that. Can you sort of see enough? So, the area through here is unchanged. That is sort of context only. That's part of the reply version of the Jack's Point structure plan. That's what has been put forward to the council as part of hearing stream 9. This area through here, from here onwards, if you like, is a slightly amended version of the notified area. And this is what we call essentially the Homestead Bay portion of the Jack's Point zone. The changes that are being suggested or recommended in the scenario A is this small bit here. Change it from open space foreshore to open space landscape, and that's something specifically sought by the submitter. In terms of what that means in real terms, open space foreshore is only what all that's enabled in open space foreshore is the maintenance of open space and native revegetation.
So it's going to come to you in the reply, I noticed a mapping error in my mapping guide. So it needs
two separate activity areas through here.
That's
just up there.
Yeah, the green line is on that. Just flushing you with that today. And so the open space landscape, what's allowed in there is farming and indigenous native vegetation. So it's a bit short there. This is one of the key areas of change. This is currently called farm buildings and arts and crafts activity area, which enables the existing residents and farm building, B&B, homestay, a little bit unusual. And they've sought and we've said yes to recommending that they should be replaced with open space residential, which is an activity area that already exists in the PDP and in the ODP. This is the area here where we've recommended on the basis of Mr. Davies' ecological evidence that it not go up quite as high as they wanted.
It looks tiny,
a couple of hectares, I think.
Davies, okay.
Yep. Yeah. Sorry, just to give you context, it's up in here that there is some evidence of liquefaction, and that's where the natural hazard sort of discussion has come from, and the fact that we're recommending that within the open space residential activity area, which is very low development, density, etc., that can be accommodated through controlled activity status. The building platforms can be clustered outside of that area if need be, or they can be engineered and there'll only be a couple of houses that we're talking about in that area. This all stays the same under this scenario, so does this. It's the village. This is the marina type area, boating facilities activity area. And here's the open space residential area, which currently exists sort of through to about this point. And what they've sought and were recommending is to allow it to expand, and this is that 18 hectare area that we spoke about, and that's the extension. Essentially the current zone comes across here and runs through here, so this is the area of expanded zoning that we're talking about, and the rest is changes within the zone itself.
So the two open space residential areas individually and collectively enable how much capacity now?
39.
So it's the original
increase of 27.
Yeah.
And OSH, is that a farming?
Is it a what, sorry?
Is that for farming?
It's called open space horticulture. And I think you're allowed 10 or 15 houses or something in there.
And they have sought for that to be removed and replaced by quite an intensive amount of development. Yeah. 15 is allowed in open space horticulture under the operating and proposed, notified proposed plan.
And so the space rule
under the scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Thank you.
Scenario B, the same.
Yeah.
Okay, so this one's completely on the proviso that more information is to come before. Again, this is our sort of Homestead Bay area that we're talking about. Got the OSL the same as in the previous scenario. OSR is the same. And this one they have sought and recommended approval of 2 new residential areas, which together allow a fair amount of standard residential development up to 15 square hectares. We've got the open space foreshore area, which currently requires 80% of it to be covered in indigenous revegetation. Based on the advice of Dr. Reed, to change that to require the gully system to be fully vegetated, but she says there will be a fit in taking that the whole way along the open space foreshore area. And so the main difference here really is these two residential areas. We've got the same open space residential. At the buffer here, we've got for open space amenity. Mm-hmm. Between which essentially splits the residential from the current farming area, which is the OSL up in here. So in the OSL, you're allowed to farm in indigenous vegetation. In the OSG, which is this area here, which is the block that the end zone, the airstrips within, that enables recreation and indigenous vegetation in the OSG area. And these are all active areas that are common to the balance of the Jack's Point zone. And then you've got OSL with a highway landscape protection area, so that's got a higher again level of protection over it, non-compliant activity status for built form unless it's a farm building. Subject to different rules similar to the rural zone. So any questions on that?
Mm-hmm. The rural Homestead Bay D&P, can you tell me the number of units maybe?
Roughly.
I tell you what, I got confused by all the different numbers
and
all the different images.
So in terms of what we are suggesting here, in terms of the scenario B recommendation, so it's less than what they had sought, simply because we pulled the line back off the ridge away from the state highway, and it's 263
for the two
together. No, sorry, in the D area,
yeah.
And 37 in the E area.
And the OSR the OSR to the north is
to the east.
To the east. That's the same size as in scenario B, is it?
In scenario A and B are identical as far as the open space residential goes.
Right.
So the reference to the 36.7 hectares on scenario B is wrong. It should be, because you know on scenario A, I think you said to us it was 18 hectares, wasn't it?
18 is what's, just to
compensate for the further. 18 is what sits outside the current zone land. We've got a current zone running through all this, which you can see on that yellow, there's the yellow on the map over there.
Yep. And the total for the OSR in both is 37, is that correct?
39. Which is 27 more than they currently have in that area. And that's partly because of extending it and partly because it's a little bit more intensive, but it's still 1.2 hectares average lot size sort of thing. Give you an idea.
Because
you had some and I've got some. I've got some about internal and you've got some about external. Do you want to start?
Well, interesting for me, just to go through the three pieces of evidence and pick up my questions.
I'll tell you what I think is going on. The issues that are unresolved in the councils in your mind as a witness. Landscape matter, which there is suggestible evidence, wastewater, traffic in general and on the state highway, and NZ1. Although you seem to have settled where you want to be on NZ1.
What's
NZ, or end zone?
Oh, end zone?
Is that what it's called?
Yes, well, I think it's end zone. Still, I think there's different experts in us telling you it's different than in our team.
Okay, then from everyone in the mission right through to wanting to keep it rural. Have I missed any major issues that aren't involved?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, so those are the four good. Yeah. Then on the airfield building, what, if the council was going to create some kind of noise contour, as they have done for Queenstown Airport, what needs to be done to get you the information you need to do that?
I'm probably not the best person to ask Mr. Charles is the best person to tell you if that's what the methodology would be, but I know that sufficient modelling wasn't done as part of the extensive resistance hearings that had occurred on the site for him to feel comfortable enough to not, you know, he doesn't have information before him to be able to draw a contour on a map. He's able to draw an indicative one which has given me a sense of you know, where it might sit. I'm not sure, noise modelling needs to occur to create that that 55 dBA contour, and if that was done then we would make sure that the residential activity area is set beyond that 55.
Isn't there a difficulty with doing that, that Dr. Charles alluded to, is that the consent they operate under actually doesn't restrict flights in a way that is amenable to contouring, because it doesn't affect the types of aircraft. It's not like the conceit that they tried for, which was declined. It didn't enable modeling. Their existing conceit, I think they can do different things in different ways with it. They have more or less noise effects.
I'm not sure. My understanding from Charlie was that if someone was to spend the resource to get the modelling done, then it would, the current allowable operation, you would be able to be put a noise contour attached to it. That was my understanding, but I know
misunderstood that. Okay. Residential shouldn't be within it, so if we didn't have the contours, arguably we could still have potentially part of residential D within the contour and still like that. Because you refer in your paragraph 18 to rule 41.5.1. Can you explain that rule to me? How that works?
paragraph 18
of your summary.
Right, and that really just refers to 41.5.1 outlines what activities can be undertaken in the certain activity areas.
Mm-hmm.
And given my recommendation, being the scenario A map that we went through, the only areas that I believe will be, that I understand in trials, the only areas that will be within a 55 DBA are OSG and OSL.
Yes, but okay, that's an existing rule. You're not suggesting an amendment to it.
Yes, I'm saying that in pursuant to this rule, in OSL only farming and vegetation can occur, and in OSG only recreation and vegetation can occur. So the rules as they stand under scenario A don't enable any residential within close proximity.
But how do you know where that limit is? If it doesn't mean if the contours haven't been there. How can you implement that rule?
Well maybe the farmers come back with an indicative.
Well, I mean that's the point. Is that rule usable?
Well, the rule just simply says in those areas. Yeah, I understand you're saying it from the legal space, but the rule's saying in those areas you can't do residential. And my understanding is that the 55 DBA doesn't extend beyond those areas.
So,
just,
let me think aloud a bit about that. So you're saying, to take the scenario B, that area D might be affected by that. Might be within the 55 contour.
Yes, under the scenario B, I think the areas that
I'm looking ahead now. That, say we decide to let them have their area D, that rule, what we're discussing, wouldn't provide any solution.
It provides a solution in terms of the OSL land.
Yes, but not
it doesn't that. Provide a solution in terms of area D.
So really we couldn't even contemplate, if we didn't accept Dr. Charles' levels, we couldn't contemplate allowing scenario D or anything like it without that being met.
Well, it's far more, I think I was saying in my section 42A report, far more certain to have it met. The only way you can do it without it being met is to have a rule saying there shall be no residential development within.
But how would you implement that?
Well, at the time of the large scale subdivision, they would need to do the modelling at the time of resource consent.
So there would be a rule that made those. A restricted discretionary rule, for example.
Yes, they were, yeah.
And have they proposed that?
No, and that's why as well I stopped short of the scenario B of proposing of going to that extent.
Okay,
until we know whether the applicant is even providing enough information to go down that track. But that I think in the absence of it, the contour, that's what would have to be the method to achieve it, and I accept it's a poor cousin to have on that match, which is a certainty for everyone.
Now, in terms of what the new just mentioned about changes in numbers and aircraft type, that's no different from the existing Queensland Airport, is it?
In terms of what, sorry?
In terms of, say, they use different aircraft types and more flights. That's the exact problem we've got at Queensland Airport, which has generated their submission, isn't it?
I'm not familiar.
Well, what they're saying is that things could change.
Things could change, and you see that's right, technology will change and flight numbers and types will change.
I've been doing airport noise stuff around different airports for years, and this is not a new problem. Every 10 years or so, they revise the contours and things change.
I think
the contour would be one constant.
Yeah.
comments made. The point that Commissioner Mountford is making is that unless end zones can be restricted to a level of noise that matches the noise contours, there is no certainty that those noise contours will apply at infinitum.
If they are able to resource consent through their discretionary.
Or even if they alter their operations under their existing consent, which from my reading of it was pretty broad.
So they just buy a bigger noisier aircraft?
Mm. They're not limited to the type of aircraft, as I understand.
I'm not that familiar with Mr. Charles. I'm very familiar with the resource consent things involved in drills, to the environment court, I understand.
So it has to work both ways, doesn't it?
Yes, well, they're subject to the noise provisions of the PDP, which, set down noise limits on fixed wing aircraft. And they would need to get resource consent, I think we're trying to recommend that, if we were to go with it, an issue that no one seems to raise, even though it's most affected by all of this, was the fact that, the proposed residential within what was, right up to the boundary of an airstrip.
And in noise contour, right there, any airport are essentially a snatch, aren't they? They represent what they found when they did the research at the times.
Yes, with the comfort, I suppose, that you need a resource consent to change that.
Mm.
And history will tell you it was extremely difficult when they did try to.
So just
to change it, they
Can you clarify that there are general noise rules in the plan that apply to aircraft movements?
Yes. So it would have changed that there's rules relating to, under the rural provisions, there's rules relating to informal airports, under the noise rules, there's rules relating to fixed wing aircraft. Thanks, James, just to finish this.
I'll ask if you know if the council has a position rather than a new president, what are you using as a planner there? First of all, does the council want end zones to stay at this location?
I don't know. All I can say is in terms of its district plan, there are strategic directions of objectives around tourism and around borders to the economy, those sorts of objectives. I've got no idea what council's view on the ongoing staying there is.
There are competing strategic objectives here, the urban development one, and the development capacity modelling and so on. Suggestion, and I think this is what I'd like to test you on, would suggest that more development would be a more intense form of development in depth than this type of debate in a joint area would be useful.
Yes, and through the PDB, considerable additional yield has been enabled within this wide area.
Mm-hmm.
And with that as the platform is where I was keen to enable as much residential as we could within limits like the noise constraints imposed by the airstrip. And 55 is a snapshot, and if you did that would suggest that they wouldn't be growing uninhibited beyond that.
No. Mr. Day is very clear in his evidence for the Queenstown Airport Corporation that the contour of the line, whereas the reality of the noise experienced by the receiving environment is a zone. But we have that certainty for sake of making rules, so I understand the situation is that, that the ideal, from your point of view, would be to have noise contours following proper study. You don't have
well, it's the natural structure plan actually aligns aligns with that contour.
Yes. Which at the moment was only in the middle. Good. And someone hasn't provided that evidence either, so that's the end of that one. Okay. Do you want to pick up anything else?
Well, I'm changing the subject.
Yes, time to.
And going to Clifford in your paragraph 11 in your summary on the honour figure rule. Just clarify what we're talking about. The trigger rule is some form of trigger rule appropriate to ensure that the council can fully consider traffic effects once development exceeds 243 units. Now, is that the sort of internal traffic on the X Point Road through the existing area, or is it for, to cover the state highways, or both?
Oh, well, it's both. I mean, that's why even I think with this trigger rule, we still actually need more evidence to.
Well, what is the trigger rule? I see, because the 243 is what they can do out of the right.
Yes.
Now,
yep.
They can't go beyond that once they've got to that point. So is this just an all-purpose rule that would overcome the lack of assessment that's been provided today?
Well, yes, I mean...
Do we really need, as Mr. Carr, for example, demands, do we need more traffic assessment, or could the... Are you suggesting the trigger rule as a substitute for
that? I've thought the same, but I still believe that more information from the applicant, even with the trigger, is necessary, even with the trigger rule. I mean, that information doesn't get us all the way to where we need to be.
So you want more assessment, more evidence, and secondly, even on top of that, you'd throw the trigger rule.
I guess it depends if the evidence was sufficient that we actually really understood that where the traffic was going to go, that there was a road that actually definitely connected into the rest of the zone. We knew where the fourth or fifth axes are actually the most appropriate, most efficient way to get extra traffic out onto the highway as opposed to two roundabouts at the existing, three roundabouts, whatever it might be, at the three existing approved accessways. If the evidence was really comprehensive, then I don't think, and ultimately that's what we would have, and we wouldn't need a trigger rule. We'd actually say, here is your zoning. We don't need to give you a zoning that may actually then get taken back on.
But Tower and Ferguson are. I don't know if you remember this, and I certainly don't. And they suggested the trigger rule by itself is enough to overcome the lack of present day assessment.
Yes, yeah, they are, that's right. I mean, I'm relying on Ms. Banks in part to say we need.
Yeah, if Ms. Banks wants to join in the discussion at any point, she's welcome.
I was going to ask, is the trigger rule, the purpose of the trigger rule to get more information or to actually make them do some proper work? Like?
Both. I think at some point, whether it's now or at risk of consent stage, more modelling needs to be done so we should understand the flows and what the best place for them to access the highway is. And the other one is, that's right, to ensure that there is a trigger. And in terms of the accessways, presumably NZTA will be able to negotiate those improvements.
If we have a structure plan, in a generic sense, shouldn't the structure plan provide some level of certainty as to what the outcomes would be on these sorts of things?
Well, that would be my preference, and that's what we would get from a trigger rule. Like, if we had enough information before us that satisfies that, yes, absolutely, a fourth access way on a road that connects all the way through, anyone who would logically use that and live at that end, we would use whatever they would logically use whichever access they wanted.
The main internal roading, etc.
Yes, and that's essentially what they saw, was to have one or two accesses shown on the highway as a key connection point in the structure plan, and or have the rule modified that recognised that there would be up to five accessways, and that's the leap that we haven't recommended be made, because we just don't know whether that's the right
approach. Well, if we look at the structure plan as recommended in Stream 9, it was recommended with three access points, and those access points are actually specifically identified on the structure plan as the location, aren't they?
Yeah.
In the rest of the tracks point out, is there any reason why this part of the structure plan is infrastructure plan should be any different.
Because there hasn't been evidence to show
that. No, that's not an answer. The question is, there a reason why the structure plan, from a planning point of view, in this part of the plan, the structure plan, should be different from the other part of the structure plan?
In terms of the consistency of approach?
Yes, for what the district plan is dealing with.
The approach is that in this zone we show access ways and they are not improved at the time of plan drafting, then that's what should happen for this third, and we should need to show another access, or we should know that we don't need another access.
Yes, because otherwise we're just leading to the ad hocery of subdivision. It may as well build his own rural and the discretionary consent for
that's my reluctance to go. I mean, I said I think the trigger rule could work, but it is a second choice in my view, and it, because you're saying here's the zoning, but in actual fact we may not be able to put 500 houses, we may only be able to put 300.
Well, that leads me to follow on from the question that Commissioner Crawford asked. Is there, in the long term scheme of things, Queenstown's development, is what is proposed in the submissions too little?
We do have to be comfortable about traffic, to be frank, make sure there are solutions.
But it's a state highway, there's always solutions.
Well, there's the trade off though, how slow you want to be going for how long to get into town.
But I mean, if we're talking 30 years from now, do we want it to be a tiny little corner and the rest of Queenstown's looking for somewhere to grow and this is locked off because of the structure plan?
Yeah. So I'm not sure they're asking you, have they undercooked it and are they asking for too low a density or it is a different land. Yeah, I mean at the moment it does have characteristics similar to Jack's Point portion as opposed to Henley Down in terms of its topography and so on. Its ability to absorb, say, a much denser rectilinear grid type connected pattern. So they have gone more with something that mimics the Jack's Point portion. They can go up to a maximum of 1500 hectare, which is quite a bit denser than our conventional low density residential. So they have pushed it further in that respect. But, potentially it could go. Traffic and wastewater aside, it could go, probably could go denser if those two things were dealt with satisfactorily.
We look at Jack's Point in the central part, that really is a response to the circumstances of the late 1990s, isn't it?
Well, I mean,
because it was way out in the country and it was rural and being rezoned and it wasn't designed as a suburb.
No, I mean, I think it comes down to the designers of that. So if it was developed, it wasn't council-led as such in terms of its design and so on. And the, you know, the landscape-led planning approach. And yes, it started as only having 500, it was only meant to have a few hundred houses, and through submissions, etc., it became something quite extensive, and that's positive in my view.
That's what I'm wondering, whether in fact the world has moved on from when the original part was envisaged and planned, and that continuing to repeat that pattern may not be the future.
I mean, we've enabled the village through the hearing screen 9, the homestead for our village is more enabling, there's more buildings, I suppose, enabled in the village. That's got no minimum density and far away than most development capacity. development has enabled that village court to 6 hectares, and they actually could develop probably, you know, they could develop more than we've estimated, because there's no minimum lot size, there's no minimum density. And they can cover 60% of that village, so they could actually do some pretty extensive, you know, terrace housing and so on through there, two-storey.
So by way of context, we had a discussion with Dr. Green from Southers the other day about, in the Kimberley Bank, about where is the area of land for Queenstown to grow. And the Coneburn Valley has many advantages, not least of which is it's not hard to do given the only element of being protected. So that's really what has got us all thinking.
Yes, yeah. And it's the trigger to buy, you know, hand me down a lot denser than it was in the previous planning document. So I think that thrust is there. It's a good point you made, whether it should be a bit of a step. I mean, we probably haven't turned our mind to it hugely other than having enabled greater intensification of the village of here in Stream 9, simply because no one has sought anything more than what that sort.
Is there an estimate of the capacity of those areas A, B, and C, the residential areas A, B, and C?
Yep. In terms of what this, they seeking.
It's just as they're proposing it.
A 40 in terms of this is what the submission seeks, and at the moment we recommend them not going there.
Yes.
46 in A, 76 in B, and 25 in C. Now, I understand that through the amendments that the submitters have done, and they've changed, you know, location and shape factors and all this stuff, but my understanding is that those essentially the areas haven't changed. So I can check with them on that, but that's what I've been advised, so it should be general.
So if we go with the developer-led approach, it's still pretty low in terms of the total land area, it's still a pretty low yield.
Yes, it is. I think that, I mean, in my view of that, it's because it is getting into quite sensitive landscape where those are, which is also why Dr. Reed is not prepared to accept them or recommend them. And we're having to do a lot of work to try and make them appropriate.
Yes.
So that may be why they've.
Given that it's not from a low enough, is it your view that the landscape is so important?
Well, I mean, I'm not the expert on the landscape.
But you can balance between section 6 and section 7, and the landscape experts have said it's section 7. So, in your weighting of the matters that we have to deal with here, given the strategic directions.
Section 7, I suppose, aren't they?
Is this something where the landscape is so important that it? That could be the development could be subservient given section 7, or should the strategic directions of enabling urban development, etc., have predominance?
Well, since I haven't, I've relied on the landscape evidence. I think if it was about efficient land use, efficient use of resources, and we wanted to get more numbers in there, I think just, yeah, I think it's another exercise to look at the whole package and see where the development can be best placed to have the minimal effect on landscape, and if we're wanting to get more development in there, should it be there up on the state highway, or are there other areas like the open space forestry area, you know, other areas, or even the open space residential, that might actually be better to be, you know, have it consolidated all around the village rather than spread out and over the hills and up into the, you know, over the state highway and somewhere where it's obviously going to mean that the end zone and the residential can't be compatible, for example. Are there other areas within that wider quadrant that we would be better to put those 120 houses?
Well, that leads me to the effect. You've started in the direction, at least into the second question, is then should giving effect to the strategic directions of the plan be developer-led or council-led? In other words, should the council be relying on developers to offer, or should the council actually be saying, this is the area that should be developed? And you can give your opinion.
I think the council should take that.
They
just like
the development
pockets. There's a huge emphasis on protecting the development from visibility from the state
highway. It's more about protecting the experience from the highway. Mm. And that's what the zone is about, and we're not looking to, and no one's really seeking or sought to.
No, I think these developers have taken that as a given and attempted to work with it because that's what's been there in the past.
Dr. Reed's probably got more to say about this than I do, but that's not really. The policy framework is not about hiding development from the state highway. It's about protecting views across the landscape from the state highway to the mountains beyond. It's not necessarily about, and there are strategic directions, we're talking about strategic directions and economic benefits and urban development, but there's also a strong landscape policy and strategic level, and they do talk about not having mitigation that in and of itself actually is offensive to the landscape and to the whole reason why people appreciate the landscape from those public places. And just remembering that that's a key part of our economic well-being, making sure that the place is a place that people want to come to.
And when you talk about the mountains beyond, that's the map, that's essentially across the mountains.
Yeah, that is. And the mounds or the buildings that they promote won't screen the mountains beyond.
But it's screen them if they are buildings.
If they were buildings?
Yeah.
No, not in the way that they're proposing.
But even if they didn't have the mountains, that's what I mean.
Oh, go without the buildings. Well, you have to ask Dr. Reed if that's actually preferable to her. I don't know what she would think is a more appropriate response. Or as I say,
we've
had the other areas
within
Homestead Bay that
are
more appropriate.
I'll go back a step. It's section 17, and the outstanding natural landscapes are in the district and the mountains. And you look across this land to it.
Mm-hmm.
If anything is, as long as buildings are set back from the highway a certain distance, you're always going to see it over the mountains because the topography
That's definitely not the issue here. The outstanding natural landscapes are not going to be your appreciation of them. Maybe for Dr. Reed, that may be the option, but they themselves will still be visible through modified landscape.
As long as we didn't have a chain of McDonald's and service stations along the state highway, it wouldn't be hard to maintain those views and keep that pleasantness, amenity value entry.
I don't know if I can say too much more about that. Leave it to Dr. Ray. Explain to you the difference.
Well, we haven't done the whiteboard yet, but I did think Mr. Beersmack might want to comment on the traffic. Was there anything you wanted to say after hearing me?
Just Vicky was saying, so I will sort of information for the submission.
That's what you said in the sub round.
Yeah,
so I wondered if there was anything you wanted to pick up. If not, okay, then wait for a minute.
Can I follow up on that one?
Yeah.
How difficult and time consuming would it be to for somebody to produce that evidence in the next 6 months?
Oh, in the next month, that's possible. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the council has a traffic model.
Yeah.
And it's only factored in the existing development, as I recall.
Yeah.
I mean, can't you tweak it to put in another X number of households and have a couple more access points somewhere else and see what happens?
Yep, that's certainly possible. It's just a matter of sort of time. And then making an assessment, like you say, of different access to use, internal roles. And then I guess what we could do is assess how the existing intersections could be upgraded to service rather than provide additional access.
And ordinarily you'd expect the submissions, the proposers who have done that first, and people are rightly saying, why do that?
Yeah.
But is this a sort of a cooperative exercise that could be done if there was a willingness? And I'll ask them
to put it this way. If the environment or the traffic engineers would be required to caucus and tell us the answer.
Yes.
We don't have the power, fortunately, indefinitely, fortunately.
So then there's pick up on wastewater, and I'm not sure how much you can say about that, but what I understand is there are solutions, but none of them have been concretised by the submission.
Yes, but from my reading of I think he still needs convincing that there are solutions. Just simply because the information and the amount of land that would be needed for on site disposal field, etc., of the many of the things we've discussed in brief, just haven't shown where that sort of amount of land is located and how it would make its way down and be safe in terms of when it's concerned with the topography of the land and the fact that it will tend to the lake. And that's really quite a large area of land that they need. And they've only shown it for 130 odd houses, and talking about a lot more than that.
A solution for the long term doesn't be a satisfactory one. The option of. What's happening at Henley Downs? Is that connecting to the council's fund?
Yes.
Yeah. So Jack's point is independent of Henley Downs is joined up.
Yes, Jake's point is all private schemes.
Yeah.
And they're down with connected to council's particular services.
Yeah. And
so quite a distance from Hunterdy Bay.
And as I understood, Mr. Glasner had no issue with Hunterdy Bay discussing with the council connecting to the council scheme, but no one had talked to him. Would that be a fair approach?
Yes, I think, but I don't know that they, I mean, I think he had concerns about how much further it was due, but he was definitely in the state with about
it as
a possible solution. I don't know that a lot of other integrated solutions have been discussed with the other parties either.
That's the limit to where that can go. Usually there's a solution.
It seems
to be the people need to sort themselves out rather than the system. Because Jason does identify two options that these things would be satisfactory technically.
My thinking is that there could be a submitter on some of those things.
So do I.
I just have one more question on wastewater, which you may not feel you're the right person to ask you this. Given it could connect to the council system, that's one scenario, and that's probably quite ideal from everybody's point of view, but the alternative, and the private alternative, to what extent does it actually fall into the regional council's portfolio?
Well,
obviously
the only process would be that would be considered application for the sort of size that we're talking about, discharge.
What to the extent, at district level, does this council need to be satisfied that something is likely to be possible?
Yeah,
before it goes to the regional, before it so that they can vote and then it goes on to the regional council.
This is a,
well, my,
where's the cut-off point?
Well, might be a little bit like traffic. I think I prefer not to zone land ahead of at least solid evidence that there was going to be a solution. Exactly what it is, as long as we know, if we've got the confidence there will be a solution that's consensible.
It would be a shame, wouldn't it, to for us to design something that the regional council can be regional.
Or would it equally be possibility that we could zone something that the regional council felt because it was zoned that had to consent?
Mm.
And that would that equally be
as
problematic as them saying no, it's not consented, notwithstanding the zoning.
So we zone something that the council feel is somewhat obliged to service essentially. And I don't know the feasibility, but it's a long way, for a few hundred lots, and whether that is what council was feeling that they needed to do in the developer's time. That's been my experience of being up at the zone, and the developer seems right within the pipe, and then it's big, so we're going to have 700 houses, and that all comes at a huge cost to council, as they get sort of brick feed their development contributions. They may well then only develop 50 lots at a time down there, and so for 15 years the council's been carrying that cost of that infrastructure, as opposed to leaving it and deciding when.
I've been surprised in the past about how far some developers are prepared to put in a park.
And the
cost until the council is ready to write off, and some years later. I think an example of Christchurch, the West Melton to Rolston, which is about 10 kilometres, and the developer was perfectly happy to put it in for about 500 miles.
I'm exhausted. I just have one trivial question. I'm sorry, I just asked it when you were going through scenario A to B. Jack's point is OSG.
OSG is one activity area within Jack's Point.
Oh,
so Jack's Point covers all that yellow area there.
The Jack's
Hill.
Jack's Point Hill. I should have called Jack's Hill. Jack's Point Hill in the notified version, in the notified PDP is OESL.
Yes.
Council's landscape evidence was such that Dr. Reid preferred OSG, which is similar to what is in the operative district plan. And it's because OSG doesn't enable farming, and Jack's Point Hill is not being farmed anymore, it was just regenerating. And so this OSG reflects the council's staff's required version of the structure plan.
I think I just got lost because it was called Dolph.
Oh, no,
it's just
a
weird sound.
I'm going to ask you if you could come up with a better name than that.
Thank you. We've done. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll just quickly check the rest of them. All the guys have three different statements, you end up putting Christians on all of them. Just a technical planning type question. I'm going back to your traffic trigger rules. And I think you had that as a restricted discretionary, didn't you?
I was thinking at the moment.
And the car for some reason seemed to think you can solve the whole problem by making a full discretionary. And I really didn't understand what. If your issue was a purely confined to one effect, then why making a full discretionary actually?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it enables our assessment of strategic and required objectives and policies. But without having given that particular issue some thought yet, really, I thought my initial view, I thought restrictive or full discretionary in that summary, but I think restrictive is as much as we would need.
Yes, for some reason, you seem to think it's hard. It was only focusing on one issue.
Yeah.
You still seem to think it could go full discretion. I couldn't follow his logic. Obviously, we can't either.
Yeah,
no, no, nothing else.
No, I'm done.
Questions.
Yes. You know, one of the questions you asked me a couple of weeks ago regarding the traffic, the average traffic flow on the highway 68?
Yes.
Yes. So maybe the annual average daily traffic was like 25,000. So for the hourly, between, if you want to edit your website, so in 2006, the annual hourly traffic was between sort of 4,800, that's from 9 a.m. to 2,400. I think that's 6 o'clock.
Right.
So you see, even though we talked about how it's probably not specific peak.
Yes,
yeah,
so it is.
Peak in AM and
the AM and PM peaks are barely bigger than the daytime, midday flow.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've just got two discrete matters.
Yes.
One is relates to Ms. Evans' evidence, and there was a question about the submission of watertight investments as to whether all of the submission had been dealt with in the earlier business here in Street. I did confirm that was the case, and all of the submission had been dealt with, but I can also now confirm that that submitter has been invited to this hearing.
Right, and they haven't wanted to be heard.
That's correct. Yeah. So we can cross that issue off our list, I think. The other issue is just the date for the reply.
Yeah.
I have a counter offer for you. But it just relates to three of the bigger rezoning requests, and they are the submissions by Remarkables Park and Queenstown Park, which has been heard in the second last week of the hearing.
And it's actually in Queenstown Park, really.
It is, yes. Yeah. That's just what the submission's been lodged under. I was referring to QPL as well. The Skyline Enterprises submission and the Grant Hensman submission. The council could file the reply for all but those three submissions on 6th of October. But what I wanted to propose was a little bit more of an extension for those three bigger rezonings, given that they've been heard at the end of the hearing. So what that would mean is you'd get both of the council's reply on the 6th of October. And I'd ask if we could file the reply, just the planning reply, anything else that needs to come in would come in earlier, on Thursday, the 12th of October, so it's an extra 6 days, essentially. I just don't like Friday.
Could we make it Thursday the meeting?
yes, we could.
I'm just thinking that we would be, we're going to start our deliberations on the 11th. If it came on Thursday, that actually. It's problematic because we need to read it, obviously. If it came on Wednesday, we could probably do some deliberations, read that.
Yes, no, look, that would be helpful just to have a little bit of an extension of just those submissions. Mm-hmm. Have they been heard at the end of the hearing?
Yes, but, I mean, the intent originally was that two of those were heard at the beginning and said that was put in, and QPL by itself wouldn't have been so problematic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That would be appreciated, Mr. Chair.
Yes, no, that's fine. And then we'll organise our deliberations around that. And we've got to just bring it out, start organising twice.
So, Mr. Chair and Commissioners, that brings us to the end of the Council's case, except actually it doesn't, because we still have three. Witnesses to call on Monday, 4th of September.
Yes.
So I will be back down here on that date, so I will see you after that.
Okay, well, I'll do it in the morning.
Thank you.